Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
This is episode 85 of Audio Face, and boy, do we have an episode for you.
We have some stuff.
This is pretty packed for what I expected a late February episode to be. We've got a lot of interesting news in the world of music, including a pretty good weekend for Chicago PD.
Right.
One story is about Jesse Smollett, which is... Bless you.
RIP headphone users.
One story is about Jesse Smollett, which has nothing to do with music, so we're not going to be talking about that. But the other story has to do with R. Kelly. Speaking of Chicago
Robertus
PD,
Kellyus.
So we're going to be talking about that in just
everybody's
a moment.
Everybody's favorite. Never mind.
And I'm going to stop right there before I get myself in serious trouble. In addition to that, music-wise, we have a Mac Miller album that might have been recorded with a really interesting guest. We have what Ariana Grande and the Beatles apparently now have in common. And we have Offset's opinion on Friend Is, the SNL segment that happened from a while ago. We also have Offset's album, Father of Four, that we'll be talking about. We also have Lil Pump's Harvard Dropout that we'll be talking about. And we'll also be talking about some music as well. There'll be Kehlani's While We Wait, Feed Me, High Street Creeps, and Gary Clark Jr.'s This Land album. So there's a lot of music, there's a lot of news.
And we jump in with a single.
Yeah, we jump in with a single. Tierra Whack is hitting us with a song that is over 60 seconds long.
Oh my God, I didn't know she can make something like this.
So this exists.
It's 4 minutes long.
Yeah, this is what we would call a song.
Yeah, it's definitely, well, because we reviewed her album last year and it was all like...
Whack World,
and it was definitely wacky.
Yeah.
And we both liked it, but we wanted something a little bit more.
Yeah, we both liked it and respected it for what it was, which is a project, and y'all listeners definitely liked and respected it
because
it won our inaugural Audience Face Award.
Mm-hmm.
And so Whack World was definitely, it's not to discount at all, but the interesting thing about Whack World was that every single song in it was... A minute long,
yeah. It was a weird poetry thing, which we did like. But this song is an actual song.
A more traditional construction, yeah.
It's definitely funky. It's different and weird, but
it still has
like
that kind of lo-fi Tierra Whack vibe where it doesn't feel cheap per se, but it feels very minimal.
I like it, actually. I think it's fun. It's different. The beat is different. It's a little groovy, and I like that.
And it keeps Tierra Whack's like sort of existential, playful melancholy that she has in her music. And the way she's like making things,
the lyrics and stuff as well.
Yeah, so that's nice to have. It was a nice surprise.
A genuinely nice surprise.
Yeah,
I like it.
I'm not rushing Tierra Whack at all. It's interesting. She could probably come out with another album this year, and people would be okay with it. Usually, we would say that's a little bit too close between albums.
But her first album is such like a different side project thing that. A full album would be nice.
And new artists tend to have a little bit more when they're first making music. So that's fine. I'm very excited for Tierra Whack as large as I can.
So let's go to everybody's favorite sex cult leader.
Yeah.
Robertus Kellyus.
Yeah. Roberto Kelly.
Yeah.
After several hearings and investigations.
Oops.
A court decided to put out a warrant for... Robert Kelly's arrest in Chicago. R. Kelly turned himself in late Friday night of this week. He was granted $1 million bond and was ordered to surrender his passport and to have no contact with anyone under the age of 18. We'll see how many hours R. Kelly's able to do this once he's granted his bond.
So sad. Oh my God. Fuck. I mean, I don't even want to talk about that much because it just makes me angry. But, you know, if you listen to us, you know all of the shit that's been going on with Robertus Kellyus.
I mean, if you listen to Audio Face, we've been talking about this since at least episode 10 about R. Kelly. And if you are just kind of existing, R. Kelly is the original XXXTentacion in the sense that everyone looks... Yeah, in the sense that everyone looks and goes... Wait, why are we giving him a pass?
Just watch the Boondocks episode of
The Trial of R. Kelly.
The Trial of R. Kelly, and that is R. Kelly in a nutshell, and XXXTentacion in a nutshell.
Yeah,
it's exactly that.
It's the it perfectly captures this weird phenomenon in society where we let celebrities get away with horrible things because we're fine with their art. And I think it's something that was interesting to make fun of back when the Boondocks did, back then. And we're reconciling how different the times are now, in a lot of ways, how they are the same.
Yeah.
Where we're willing to tolerate a lot less, but there's still a lot that we'll tolerate. Nevertheless, there seems to be a little bit of actual justice in these cases. As usual, R. Kelly's generally repentant. His legal counsel says, speaking for R. Kelly, that all of the women are liars.
Well.
And that he is willing to fight all the cases one by one if necessary. Yes. So, of course, as usual,
right, I mean, Trump.
Bill Cosby still believes he's innocent.
Right.
And that he's, like, a political prisoner, so.
That's a thing, too.
You know, there's not much to say because we already have, but these unrepentant sort of assholes are really rampant in music, and it's something that, you know,
actually,
should be thought of and considered.
You know who just spoke up about misogyny in music? Is the one Matty Aeschylus at the Brit Awards.
Why is everyone, like, Gluteus Maximus for you today?
I don't know. I'm just feeling weird. But I don't want to talk about Maddie because I try not to now, but I thought that was pretty woke. I'm like, hey, he's got a point.
It's good because unfortunately you have to commend and point out when artists say the right things as far as making sure people are treated fairly, because this happens so much in music.
He just brought it out right in the middle of the Brits. He's like, hey, this shit happens. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So we have While We Wait by Kalani.
Yes.
Little album/mixtape. I don't know what you want to call it, because
She calls it a mixtape.
I mean, I can grant that. It's only half an hour long.
Yeah.
9 songs, so, I mean, I'll allow it.
9 songs, 31 minutes. It's got a decent but not overwhelming selection of features.
Yeah, so you have features.
Yeah, you have Black and Ty Dolla $ign. You also have some artists I'm not as familiar with.
Music Soul Child and Dom Kennedy. Dom Kennedy you've heard of before. Music Soul Child I haven't.
Yeah. And each song, Kalani fans might see this and I think is a little bit of a departure from her previous work, which is why when an artist says what their project is, whether it be an album, an EP, or a mixtape, that's the best way to, I think, listen and trust them because, like, they know what
they want to make. Yeah.
And it's also good because Kalani is, like, a tier of artist here where she's not just screwing around making music for the fuck of it. She's just like, okay, I'm deliberately calling this a mixtape because it's a different type of project than one of my albums. And Kalani is well known for meticulously structuring albums that they're the right way. So she knows what she's talking about here. I largely liked the album.
It's fun. I liked it as well. I especially like the last song, No Love Language, I liked a lot.
Yeah,
it's funny. All of the albums we listen to, I like their last songs, which is weird. Most albums lately, the finishing parts of them haven't been that great, but this week is a little different.
I think I'll need to go through all these albums again, like one more time, look at them while reviewing to make my final call. But I will say for this album, my favorite songs were in the second half. I just found that I just have a love thing for Black with a 6. Or, like, not love thing, but I generally tend to like what he does. And I think that...
Sklack.
Yeah, Sklack.
Because I remember when I first saw him, like, what is his name? Sklack? 6 Clack?
I'm saying Sklack. Black with a 6.
Sklack with a 6. I'm like, all right.
It's like that Simpsons joke, Yale with a 6. which I always make. But no, I really think that, especially on the song RPG... Black and Kalani are just really good mixes for each other. I think they complement each other really well vocally. I think the thing they're doing with R&B, but kind of pushing it beyond the boundaries of that genre, whatever that genre is at this point, honestly, and making something soulful but still, you know, fresh and into it. I think that was a really good, like, sort of talent. Show me your love, show me your love, show me your love, show me your love, show me your love.
I don't wanna make you think that I'm saying things cause you prompted me. Been working with a lag, a fucked up past, I want you to be proud of me. It seems like day one, you was fond of me. Same shit I felt for you, then I fell for you. Fell in life, it's embarrassing to tell the truth. But now it's to the point where my love is up for debate.
And even I generally don't like Ty Dolla $ign that often, but I think the 1-2 punch of Nights leading into RPG makes it sort of tolerable for me.
I mean, I liked it. It's not something I will listen to most of the time, but I definitely appreciated it for what it was.
And this also has the sort of ephemeral feeling of a drop. Like, everything I'd kind of define as a drop, as in, if you know the artist really well and you like the artist, you're going to remember this release.
Yeah. Okay.
But overall, it's kind of just like, you know, a drop in the bucket, if you will. My arbitrary score, and the arbitrary scale we'll be using this episode, is annual bonuses at the Chicago Police Department, because the boys in blue been putting in work this week. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a... I'm not going to complicate this, because I was going to introduce like pay scales and compensation packages. Neither of us really have the energy at this point.
Nope.
So I'm going to say a $5,000 bonus. You know, I did pretty good at the end of the year. Met your quotas, wrote your tickets. So that's a pretty sizable, good amount of money, I would say.
It's like a $3,000 bonus, like you can buy some new cars.
Get
the joke.
Yeah, like the new Dodge Police Cruiser.
Yeah, exactly. Invest in some new tires. So, Florida prisons are getting sued for erasing $11 million worth of prisoner music purchases.
Yeah, so this story
this is, interesting.
Is a little bit interesting and really offbeat, which is why I love the fact we have this podcast and we can talk about these things.
This is so strange.
So, apparently there are these services where inmates can buy specifically designed media players for about around $100 and then buy individual songs and audiobooks for about $2 a piece. So there's it's interesting. I guess there's no streaming service in prison. But in 2018, apparently they switched contractors, and this is the Florida prison system, I believe, the Florida Department of Corrections, and they didn't honor the previous purchases. And so...
Oh, I see.
They had to basically pay money to get more of that music back. And so the prisoners are suing, saying that this is, like, unfair that the things they purchased for... And by the way, $100 is, like, no small feat in prison.
No,
when if you're lucky and you get a job, you get paid $2 an hour.
Yeah. So you get that slave labor in prison.
Yeah. We essentially have slavery in America.
Slave labor.
It's just being in prison and working.
What do you know about that? Did you just say what I said? But smarter.
And there's like there's a whole cottage industry of companies that profit off of fucking over prisoners financially.
Oh, I mean, that's... Yeah.
The music is like kind of a really arbitrary example. And keep in mind, like this is actually one of the ways that people in prison are able to communicate with people on the outside, because they can make CDs and, you know, mixtapes of their own and playlists of their own to share with rich. People. Yeah, and, you know, Gucci Mane makes albums. But, this also reminds me of when in prisons, the companies that run the phones start to screw over prisoners by charging a lot of money to use the services. So it's just all fucked up altogether. Picking on people in the prison system and society and making them pay more. Which I do give one exception for. We should do this for Tekashi 6ix9ine because... he was supposed to be going to prison, but 2019 was shaping up to be really good as far as justice goes. But apparently 6ix9ine finally learned to sing without autotune.
Basically, he ratted out everybody to the full so that he's not getting... prosecution, correct?
Yeah, the U.S. District Attorney's Office of Southern New York, which is not a particularly lenient District Attorney's Office. Like, they come correct.
Yeah.
That being said... Tekashi 6ix9ine apparently said things that were pretty good, because they're going to recommend, they've agreed to not prosecute the rapper.
Yeah.
We've previously reported, I think, on Audioface that it's likely that Tekashi 6ix9ine will be offered to go into some sort of witness protection program. I would highly recommend that.
Yes, big time.
But, yeah, Sean and I actually had to talk about this a little bit off air and realized that, this might actually qualify for an award. We'll see if this continues happening in music, but if so, Tekashi 6ix9ine might be the winner of the very first Audioface Rap Snitch Knishes Award.
He deserves it.
Yeah, and for those of you who are not fully aware, you need to absolutely check out Rap Snitch Knishes by MF Doom and Mr. Fantastic from the Food album. Yes, Uncle Rapper's now, but back then they're rapping when it was good, and it tells this entire story, because this keeps happening again in hip-hop music. And speaking of run-ins with the law, Lil Pump, TMZ got some leaked body cam footage showing Lil Pump and one of his mug friends.
Shot is, God.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Been some really punchable mug shots this week. Okay, what do you think's a rougher face tattoo? 21 Savage's knife dagger on the forehead or Lil Pump's dead ex's face forehead thing?
Charles Manson swastika.
Whoa! Oh, right. That's out of the gates. That's a winner. Anyways, Lil Pump was arrested by...
Never forget.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I totally forgot.
Never forget. Ever.
Tyler, the Creator's mugshot is on here, and it's pretty wild. I
forgot about that. Jesus.
Dusk Till Dawn.
From the original From Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, Eldrick's mugshot is the best mugshot ever.
Anyways. The highlight of the TMZ video, if the only reason I really want to bring this up is because in the end, when they finally start actually arresting Lil Pump, he says, when he's being mad that he's being restrained and people are grabbing his arms, he's saying, "You're going to drop my jewelry."
Yep.
And it's just like the funniest thing ever. I really...
This guy's such a cunt.
Yeah, I love
it. Speaking of that piece of shit, is his final, or his finally, his stupid album, Harvard Dropout, that's spelt wrong. Go fucking...
So I heard that the reason Harvard Dropout is spelled wrong, in addition to Lil Pump being just Lil Pump, is that it's to avoid any lawsuits with Harvard, the real Harvard. You know, the one that he didn't go to.
Oh, shit, that's right. He could actually get in trouble for that.
Yeah. So at least there's that. But the Harvard Dropout came out. It is 16 songs long and
which, I mean,
too long.
Most of them have already come out, too.
Yeah, and a little...
Let's get it. I love it.
I love it. You're such a fucking hoe. I love it. You're such a fucking hoe. I love it. Cause your boyfriend is a dork. Make loving. I just pulled up in the ghost. Fucked that bitch up out in London. Then I fucked up on a cousin or her sister.
Butterfly Doors. A few of these songs have already come out. And we had that whole thing back in August when his album was supposed to get released. But he goes, "Where the fuck's my album?"
Yeah.
Stupidity.
And the thing about Lil Pump is that most of his songs really come in, like, definitely under the 3-minute mark and oftentimes around the 2-minute mark.
Yes.
And so, and the
By the way, 16 songs, 40 minutes long.
Yeah. And the entire album is, in case you haven't realized, this is a So You Don't Have To. So we don't like this album and we're not going to really give it a full-on in-depth review.
I don't feel
you just
like
need
it.
To know that most of the songs have already come out. The beats are, like, literally so bad. Like, Sean and I could have... If you told us that this is all we had to do to produce an album and make these beats, we could literally make it in 30 minutes.
The entire album. Every song has basically the same beat. The same...
the same beat. It's like, you're literally fucking...
Copy-pasting.
You're literally fucking around because you got a... music tool or something to make music with, like GarageBand or something.
Yeah, you open up GarageBand and you play.
You're not trying to learn how to get.
Yeah.
You're not trying to learn how to get good at it. You're just trying to learn how to make the simplest beats possible and then rap over it.
And his rapping isn't even good. That's the annoying part.
Like even the edits they made. Like I don't usually pay. Production things usually don't stick out to me that much in music.
Yeah.
I'm very much thinking of like literally what sounds are you making and what the tone is it of. But the edit for Butterfly Doors, where it's trying to eliminate the racism, I actually listened to it. It's just done so badly where they try to fix the voices and do all this stuff.
It's sloppy.
Yeah, it's
just annoying and shitty. Don't listen to Lil Pump. Don't give these assholes money. People like him need to be stopped.
The entire thing's straight horrible. So if you've heard the song I Love It with Kanye West, unfortunately that's probably the best song on here.
And it's sad.
Yeah, it's sad, and it literally took Kanye West to make it better. I also liked, actually, Lil Wayne's part of Be Like Me was the closest I was able to get to, because Lil Wayne actually has, even when he's not trying, which he clearly wasn't on here, has lyrical talent.
No, definitely.
And
I mean, we liked his last album.
See Tycoon and if the shoe fit wear it, I can't if these not new, little nigga, please. Y'all my mini-me's, but the kid is not my son. Shout out Billie Jean. You following my lead, my chopper isn't clean. And Lil Pumpy got the pump, I got the M16. My pocket stuffy, they gon' need some manners to me. Niggas always bit the C, the bitches never bit the D. I'm pouring out the fat.
Yeah, and so having that lyrical talent on literally these Fisher-Price toy-ass beats, like, makes no fucking sense.
Honestly, very good.
Like, it's just so out of place and out of rack that I just don't like it.
Anyways.
So, don't listen to it, but you didn't expect any better.
Yeah, they need to, the police department needs to pay money. So speaking of, now we go to good artists who unfortunately died. Mac Miller. He reportedly recorded an album with Madlib before he died. Holy shit.
Madlib, for the old heads, for the real ones, is half of Madvillain.
Which is arguably one of the greatest rap albums of all time.
Which is arguably the greatest rap album of all time. It's not even one of. It's definitely within top three.
That's what I'm saying. One of, like, you could... Yeah. There's a five pedestal albums, and that's anywhere in those one through five.
Yeah. Very arguable, but, like, it has to be there for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chicago producer Thelonious Martin was asked in an interview with DJ Booth, saying that there is an album that does exist called Madlib.
Oh,
my and, God. And, let me see. So I'm trying to focus on DJ, and Madlib gets on 15 minutes into his set, and he just randomly plays a Mac Miller joint. And I turn to him, and I'm like, there's more of these, right? He said, oh, yeah, there's a whole album, Madlib. So Madlib's got this album where he made beats for Mac Miller, and Mac Miller rapped over it. And if it only finished four songs and it were 20 minutes long, I would still want to hear the fuck out of it. So Madlib, balls in your court. I'd be very interested to hear this album.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear it. Because we both liked Mac Miller's last album. We like his stuff.
It was a different, like...
Definitely different
the, thing. The things that we... Or, like, didn't like or weren't at least super warm to with Mac Miller's album had nothing to do with, like, his lyrical talent. Mm-hmm. It was just, like, it was an interesting pairing musically. And I think over time that album has, regardless of the situation involving his passing, I think that album has sort of aged in a way that shows that, you know, musically he was trying something different and pushing the boundaries, mm-hmm. but it ultimately, like, landed on its feet. But, you know, Madlib, like, he's got a certain sound, he's got certain talents, and it goes very hard. And I think... It would have complemented Mac Miller's rapping style, not necessarily better than Swimming did, but, you know, in a different way that I think is more conventional and familiar to rap heads. And this is a phenomenal album. I hope it gets released one day. It'll be a great week in Audio Face if it ever is. Should I continue?
I'm reading what he was saying. So, Offset. Note a little bit, Offset.
Note a little bit, Offset.
He does not like Friendos. So Friendos, which is the SNL skit with everybody's favorite crazy Donald Glover, did, and I forget who the other two actors who did it with.
I think it was Kenan Thompson.
There we go.
And someone else in SNL. But anyways.
He said that, I guess he did not like, that Offset didn't like the skit at all because he said, I'm gonna be honest. We didn't like that skit because it was like the total opposite of the Migos. We rock with each other. We ain't arguing. And then I felt like it was interpreted like we was some dodo birds. First off, that honestly hurt my English to read that. I'm not even.
And your English is like
my English is already sketchy enough. It's shitty as is, but that. Hurt for me to say that. Second off, it's a joke, dumbass.
Yeah, they clearly didn't
fucking.
There's
a reason why
joke.
Offset won the Note a Little Bitch Award. This is one of those reasons. Fucking Snowflake Award Offset. The Ben Shapiro Facts Don't Care About Your Feelings Award to Offset.
And the other thing that I also sort of noticed here that's subtle, I don't know where he was going with the Dodo Birds comment, but I also thought that, like, because remember, it's an episode about a hyper-masculine rap group going to therapy for their problems.
Yes.
And it's actually sort of a nuanced, unlike most SNL skits, which is literally just neoliberal drivel and garbage, yeah, and resistance garbage, it actually had a lot of depth and sort
resist. Resist from the left. Why are we in Syria? But we haven't bought out Syria. Sorry.
Sorry, I just do nothing but podcast Keith Olbermann videos all day, and that's my basically political intake. But anyways,
that's so rough.
With the Dodo Birds thing, it just seems very flippant of the main, like, thing that was sort of groundbreaking in that skit, which was a real sort of look at mental health and friendship. It's in hyper-masculine, like, groups of color, especially male groups of color, which is kind of groundbreaking for a show like SNL and above average from expecting. But yeah, clearly there was a joke and Offset extremely missed it. We'll talk more about Offset in just a little bit.
Oh, we have Feed Me, High Street Creeps. So Feed Me is off of Deadmau5's label. He should still be at Deadmau5's label. Mousetrap Records, I believe. And
The most recent album, High Street Creeps, was released on Mousetrap.
Okay, yeah. Because he should still be on Mousetrap. 10 songs long, 15 minutes long. I don't know, I said it backwards. We reviewed some of his stuff at the very beginning of Audio Phase because I like Feed Me's music.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite EDM artists, especially like rising EDM, where I get in that territory of borderline hyphy typhy, but not too crazy that, you know, Rez can do sometimes where...
Yeah.
I can either love it or I hate it. And that's usually Feed Me. Feed Me stuff usually is pretty chill and it's not too crazy.
It doesn't fit within the mainstream construction of what an EDM song is now, which is just build up, drop, pop song with like weird, scratchy vocals and...
This one...
Like, yeah, just general cliches that would be sort of done, overplayed at a music festival.
This album is a kind of a departure in a way from some of... Feed Me's sound. It dives into the mainstream EDM, but it has a different take on it in a way. It borderline for me, some of the songs, like the beginning of the album, the first song I did not like at all, Perfect Blue, because it felt like a generic EDM song. And then Shimmer and Sleepless, those two songs, 2 and 3, sounded more like Feed Me, but a mix between his normal stuff and kind of normal EDM. And I like that. I like those two songs.
Shimmer was very promising for me as well.
Yeah. It kept going back and forth between kind of a lo-fi sound to hi-fi, like going back and forth between trying to mix different sounds, doing drops, but not too generic. And then the last song, Defiant, featuring Lindsay. Oh my God, this is a fucking track. This is my favorite shit in EDM. Almost sounds like a Deadmau5 song, but a little grungier, a little more growl to it. Because you know Deadmau5's stuff is always pristine. You know, it's always crisp, super clear.
Yeah.
It's always one of the best DJs in the world. This was almost like that with Feed Me spin in it, something that he really made. And to me, this is an album that I really like. It's different from him than what I've been listening to. I've been listening to him for a few years, and I quite like it. It's experimental. Some of the stuff didn't work, but for the most part, it did work. I was worried on that first song I listened to. I'm like, oh no,
yeah,
like, please don't. But
I feel like there was a hint.
It's good.
I feel like there was a hint. Like there was, like Feed Me was trying to do a little bit. He was trying to pick of what from mainstream EDM he like and want to work
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
And I feel like in much of that, like more of it than not. It was a little bit of a miss. Mm. But Feed Me's core is still, like, very good enough. And a lot of things he did try, I'd say 25% of the things he did try that are from mainstream EDM were hits mm-hmm. in that sense, or, like, hit well. And so that ultimately improved the quality of the album.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what aspects of mainstream EDM sound good. Because there are aspects that sound great. It's just now it's trying to figure out what you can do with them, you know, and trying to make something that... It's not so nuanced that only a small crowd of people will like it.
Yeah.
And not make it sound like shit, like most of the mainstream stuff is.
One thing that came out a lot in this album, I do want to say, that didn't land very well was that it took a lot of the elements from EDM that make it more fast-paced, honestly.
Like, yeah, definitely. It's definitely fast-paced.
But Feed Me is kind of doesn't really break from or to sort of a progressive house lineup or like way of laying out his tracks. And so because you're expecting a quicker way of doing things, or like you're expecting a quicker sort of element up to the music, while at the same time it ends up being slower and more prolonged and drawn out, mm-hmm. it sort of makes it feel like, I don't know, I guess it makes it feel older than it really is, or a little more outdated than it already is, because it stays with that. It chooses to stay with the style where it keeps new EDM sort of sounds and ideas, but in progressive house lineup. So it just ends up repeating certain things over and over again, but it repeats the parts of EDM that are over-repetitive over and over again.
I could see
over
that,
long
yeah.
periods of time. Not throughout the whole album, but there's I a noticed couple it songs, that it happened yeah. there. Definitely in Perfect Blue it happened, because mm-hmm. that's what kind of made me uncomfortable. And then
definitely that first song made me uncomfortable.
I feel like Till the Wheels Come Off, it also happened
honestly,
again somewhere in the middle of the album.
It's honestly with his features. Those where it comes, because it's the vocals. The vocals to me made it sound, when he added the vocals into it, that's where it started to take that normal EDM turn. I'm like, I don't like this. I see what you're trying. Some of it works and some of it didn't. The last one did though. So overall, I mean, this is a solid like...
I give this a $2,500 bonus.
Yeah, I was going to say another 3 or 4K.
Yeah.
About that, I did like it a lot. There's some things I won't listen to. I'm definitely, Defiant's going to go on my, I need to make a Sean House music list, and Defiant will end up on there for sure.
Yeah.
And then some of older Feed Me stuff, because I like a lot of his work.
Well, one of my favorite things to do on Audiophins, which we don't do enough very often, is revisiting music recommendations that we did, because I think Feed Me was on your, like,
Feed Me was on one of my, definitely was.
And yeah, it's nice to see, like, watch them make new music and release new music. It's one of my favorite things to do is review that. And so this was fun and nice, and I'm glad this came out during this week, where otherwise
right.
Offset would be a thing, which we'll get to in just a moment. But
Ariana Grande.
Yes. Could you go
ahead? I bet yeah. she beat the Beatles' 55-year chart record with Thank You Next. Yeah, it's... I'm trying to find exactly.
Basically, the way it works is that Ariana Grande had the top three spots of mm-hmm. Billboard's Hot 100 Singles chart for a week. And all three of those spots were Ariana Grande from her new album, Thank You Next. The only time that's happened before was in 1964 yep. with The Beatles.
Yep.
And
that's like, that's peak Beatlemania. That's peak. Yeah. 64 is... really when they exploded all over the world. Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. I think she's extremely overrated. Pop is very generic and her shit's good, not good, really.
She's a popular singer, but, like, beyond that, it's
her
not
voice
like
is amazing. I love it. Her lyrics and music are trash.
You're very substandard.
Extremely
it leaves
overrated.
A lot to be desired. But, I mean, you have to recognize that she achieved that. And her voice is good.
I mean,
she got achieved,
it's
so.
Better this than XXXTentacion.
Yeah. And it's better this than a lot of other
A lot of other pop. It's not the worst pop by far, but it's still something to me where I want more people to have a broader expanse of music, a broader thing. Than just listening to top 40 and thinking that this is good music, because there's so much out there that is a lot better.
And like, there's so
example,
much out there that's significant.
Okay. Yeah, like the Japanese House is coming out with an album next week, which I'm like, hey, it's plugging to good female solo artists.
Yeah,
look out for Amber.
I'm gonna say there's a lot of good music that's out there. There's a lot of bad music that's out there. And then there's a lot of rancid music.
And
that's
then there's
out there.
A lot. And then there's the one, the only
noted little bitch Offset.
See, now you understand why I gave him this award.
Hold on,
little bitch, and it just rolls off the. It's like a Maranello with a Scuderia Ferrari. It just rolls off the tongue.
Noted little bitch, adulterer, and anti-Semite Offset.
Oh, super anti-Semite now. Because it was bad already with Migos, and on one of their solo albums. Now it's.
It's just like egregious now, and we need. It's like it's not funny.
So on the song,
let's go through. There's an album here.
I don't even want to go through the album. It's dog shit. Follow the 4 Part made Cardi B cry. Note a little bitch Cardi B award from having Offset, who you divorced because he put a dick in someone else's.
Offset's
thing.
Album Father of Four is 16 songs long.
57 minutes
long. And 57 minutes long, which honestly, thank God it's under an hour. But it definitely was still too long.
J. Cole's part wasn't even good on his second song, too.
And here's the thing. So, a couple of things this album did that I liked a little bit better than I thought. I think a couple of the features were good. Unfortunately, Offset featured with a good artist. Mm-hmm. The good artist can usually save the song. I don't think so with J. Cole, but I definitely will say the CeeLo Green song was really good, and the Travis Scott 21 Savage song I liked. And Cardi B, as usual, killed whatever she features on, and even saved Offset, because of course.
And apparently this was made before their impending demise.
The bulk of it was, apparently. Mm-hmm. And I was honestly thinking that maybe Offset might surprise us with a little something different, because Father of Four had a surprising amount of...
The first song wasn't bad, honestly.
It had a surprising amount of depth, production-wise. I mean,
there
are barely any trap tags in here, which is interesting. Yeah. Production-wise, it does like a little bit of a different thing with the trap music, mostly making a lot of the effects reverb a little bit lower, so it has a sort of muffled effect to it, which I actually sort of liked. I like it in a lot of what ends up being Ray Shremmer's production, but it didn't really deviate beyond that sort of little tweak to a regular trap sound, so it's still not that much of an improvement. And then neither Offset nor Takeoff nor Quavo had anything worth filling an album's worth of music to say. No. And that rings true here. Sean, any last thoughts before sending off this dumpster fire?
Underrated. Says
Jesus Christ.
That get more, hold on, what was the exact lyric? Make more money than the Jews.
Swimming through the blues, trying to get more riches than the Jews. Ain't no books in the book bag, it's a Uzi. Why your bitch look at me, Susie choosy? You can't get a back row sitting in the house. Marble in the floor in the kitchen all top.
Yeah, it's
also, he says something about underage girls on there as well in that song. So that song in general is a dumpster fire. Ooh. Underrated.
Yeah.
The song Underrated is underrated because now exposes Offset as the notable anti-Semite. Should we give that award? No. Horrible. Don't listen to it. Fuck it. Offset's really bad.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. The lyric is swimming through these blues trying to get more richer than the Jews.
There we go. And then what's the one? There's a few before that where he says something about underage girls.
So, 16. They're asking for a pick, but they're 60 years old. It's past 16.
Oh, 60?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard 16.
Yeah, it can be very awkward. Whoops, but either way, it's bad. It's not worth it. We listened to No Little Bitch Offset's Father of Four, so you don't have to. Really fast. Peter Tork, who was the bassist for the Monkees, a very, very popular band of yesteryear. I think they had a 50th anniversary tour a little recently.
They're one of the original big British bands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So super like into Monero in that sense. Yeah.
Definitely like the Monkees.
Yeah. My parents are convinced that the Monkees are a precursor to Gorillaz, and you might be sort of fair with that.
actually, I haven't heard that before. It's kind of funny.
But yeah, he is dead at age 77. He was a really, like, he's one of those bassists that sticks out in my head as being like a really talented.
He's weird. He was a weird guy. That's why.
Yeah.
He's, you know how Flea is now. He's the original Flea.
Yeah.
He's usually bassists are pretty quiet. You don't notice them or whatnot compared to guitarists and vocalists and drummers. Bassists are usually off the side because they have to keep the rhythm most of the time.
And they can't be as flamboyant.
Can't. But he was one of those, not a frontman bass player, but one of those that
his personality was very big to the overall persona of the group.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of those where you knew his name.
Yeah,
you were really big into what he did with the band and everything. And he's also the main guy who wrote most of their lyrics too. So sad to see that. Rip Peter Tork big time. Do like the Monkees a lot, so
yeah.
It's very, very sad to see that. Last album of the day.
Yeah, and we actually don't have a story to end on a fun note. This is where we're close to wrapping things up, but
we'll wrap up this album. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So This Land by Gary Clark Jr. 17 songs, 1 hour, 12 minutes long. So Gary Clark Jr. being the Texas man, guitarist.
Afro-American. So,
Afro-American. I don't know why you gotta put race into it, but okay.
Because he puts race into the first song.
I was actually about to say, I'm like, because his first song is fucking wild.
His first song...
It's
good that it's a first song because it doesn't really... It doesn't quite set the tone for the rest of the album. I mean, like, musically it does, but thematically, it's very much a standalone. At least to me. This Land's a very, like...
No, I mean, what about Us? You can go along with that song, but then the rest of the album's different from those two in my...
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of political themes within the album, but it just comes out to the forefront throughout there, whereas I think the rest of the album thematically is very much in line with, I would say, what's traditional for the genre, but this genre is also very non-traditional. But I'm not going to have it myself. This Land's very, like, political song about being a black in, like, Trump's America kind of thing. Thankfully, the politics and being about Trump specifically sort of is contained in that song, mm-hmm. because we've talked about how...
It wasn't whiny.
Yeah, we've talked about there's a fine line when you're making political songs, especially about this era.
You could be Matty Healy or you could be Lana Del Rey, and you don't want to be Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, this is very much close to the Matty Healy scale on that, in that comparison. But it's... I kind of compare his sound to D'Angelo, where it's like a little bit bluesy, a little bit soul-y, but... And
okay, I mean, that's a good comparison in a way.
Yeah, but, and I hate making this comparison because I don't like comparing certain people to other certain people, but he's like adding a Jimi Hendrix sort of vibe to it, which is this really...
This guitar is great.
Characteristic and expressive guitar with riffs and solos lines. Like,
I mean, if you've listened to his music before, people and music commentators and journalists and stuff have compared him to Jimi Hendrix a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So it's not something out of the ordinary to
It's just like Jimi Hendrix is a very special place as a musician. So it's like I don't make that comparison very lightly, and I guess I don't like to give people the pleasure of that comparison. But
it's just nice to get get a sound. It's to give people an idea of what the sound is too, because when reviewing albums, that's why I always go with something that we've talked about so much. I go into that sound, so Radiohead, 1975, Gorillaz, Arctic Monkeys, stuff like that are staples, Deadmau5, Rez, whatever, are staples of music that we hold so dire. We've talked about it so much.
Or
if you're a fan of the show, if you're a fan of the show, you've listened to those albums, so you've listened to those artists, so you know what it sounds like, so
it's a pretty good jumping off point.
Yeah, this is what it sounds like. This is what it sounds like, just to give people a general idea.
I think that's good insight into how we sort of review albums.
Yeah,
that can be usually opaque to people, and it can seem like we're just comparing it to things we like all the time.
And that's why I try not to do that, but it's more of just to give people a genuine idea of what the sound is, so they're not just running to it blind, because some people don't want to listen to certain things.
Yeah.
Which is honestly fine.
Plus, I don't want to get too far away from the point of the album, but plus when we are comparing these albums, because the albums we're comparing, like the old albums we're comparing it to, the 1975s, the Daft Punk's,
exactly,
have a lot of different elements within them that are able to be extrapolated to other parts of music. That's kind of what makes them as works very good to begin with, is that they just have so much going on that can be attached to other parts of music wherever you go. So I think it's a good way of enunciating it or putting it into words. But this is all to go back to what we think about the This Land album. And so it's, just got a lot of a rock Americana vibe, but whereas rock and Americana kind of gets played out, it replaces those played out elements with a little bit of rap and trap, honestly. Yeah. Some of his vocals are done in a, definitely sounds like rock, and most people would call it rock, but if you pay attention to the way the vocals are being delivered and the way that, a little bit of like the instrumentation and the rhythm within his voice, it mirrors a lot of like the triplet flow that you would hear in rap or especially trap lately. But yeah, there's also, you might have like a trap beat or a trap drum line, but you'll have just beautiful, just clean silk guitar in it. And it's interesting because guitar has been sort of dying recently as far as using it as a music.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we've been saying for a little while, but I've wanted somebody to make an album that
breathes life into it.
Yeah, and breathes something that sounds like this day and age with it, and this does that. I honestly, there's another one, Miles Kane, who I should have reviewed last year, and I didn't, and I don't know why. I think actually I was racing that weekend or something. It was, I think, August of 18, but who did that as well? There's a couple artists that do make great albums with a normal rock thing, theme. And this is one of those. I didn't quite enjoy it. So, yeah, that was Audioface, episode 85.
Oh, let's give us a ranking. Let's.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to rank that. I want to give this a solid, like, 10K. Like, get new cars and some new cops.
This is a 7K bonus. You get a brand new nightstick, a new taser. I knew who was reaching for my gun. You get the whole set and a nice little... I mean, you're not getting a pension. We don't give people pensions anymore. God, what are we, savages now?
Right. Do we have unions?
To the free markets with ye.
Right.
But yeah, it's a very solid album. It's actually quite a masterpiece, honestly. Even, I think it's nice without the two bonus tracks, but I actually do like the two bonus tracks. I like to think of the album without the two bonus tracks, because I do think those two bonus tracks make it a little bit longer, like 9-10 minutes longer than the album needs to be as a whole, but they're good songs. Gary Clark Jr. is an amazing talent, and he's like has songwriting and producing chops that, like, I think are definitely understated. He's has a caliber of being like one of the great artists, especially in rock, especially kind of just in general, but especially of this decade.
Mm-hmm.
But his name isn't being floated around nearly as much as I think it is, but I'm going to start changing that, I think. It's a really good album. But yeah, thank you. This was Audioface. We have next week, music-wise, is going to be pretty fun for us, genuinely. You have Hozier. Is that how we pronounce it?
Hozier.
Yeah, Hozier. Little Sims, the Japanese House, which you were just saying the praises of just moments ago, and Weezer. Yes, and 2 weeks from now, we're going to have our wonderful State of Music Genres conversation, because
that's... I like doing that. That's a little update.
Yeah. So yeah, this has been Audioface. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at AudiofacePod. You can check out our YouTube channel, where we'll be putting up YouTube videos.
I really need to clean my laptop. I just realized
intermittently. We just need to have a general cleanup. But you can do that by going to youtube.audioface.show. Sean can be found on Twitter, not really tweeting, but the account exists, at SW Suarez. And on Instagram, also at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web, and at Instagram at Dan from the Internet. This has been Audioface 85. We enjoy you as listeners. Yes. We enjoy organics.
The organics.
The awesome organics, especially the new organics, will do the organic pledge, which is not a cult-like thing. It's literally just giving us a rating of 5 stars or a comment on the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you're listening. Or
tell
also
us
just
music.
Telling friends to listen to the podcast. Tell us music so we can talk about it on the podcast.
Also, thank you, organics. I know who you are. I run the Instagram, and the ones who keep liking, I go, I know you. I know where you live. No, not really.
It does so.
Free Snowden.
It brings us a little bit of joy in our lives that can be up and down generally, to know that this podcast is an interesting little community of people who, like, you know, really care about music and have standards in music, which we didn't believe happened before, but you know, we're getting too sappy now.
It's been a night. Jacking off to ourselves. Good night.
Bye. Peace. Cheers.
Bye.